are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Tuesday, October 23rd, 2018. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Khashoggi body parts supposedly found in the Saudi embassy in Istanbul, as Erdogan says the whole thing was planned. Meanwhile, Republicans need a caravan just to carry their lies. And it's 13 days until Election Day. The polls and early voting numbers start to come in. Meanwhile, in New Hampshire, voting restrictions struck. In Georgia, voting restrictions working overtime. Supreme Court shields Wilbur Ross from testifying about the census's attack on immigrants. And the Bible Museum in Washington conned, proving there's no trust amongst grifters. And the Trump administration continues its assault on health care. And three Proud Boys are arrested and charged for assault in New York. And meanwhile, Trump administration starts to attack trans rights. And a bomb is found in George Soros's mailbox. Happy Tuesday, everyone. All this and more on today's Majority Report. Yes, folks, back from the West Coast, Brendan and I were out there this weekend for Politicon, which I saw John Fugelsang there, and he had the best description of it for me. He said, it's like Comic-Con, but with a lot less integrity. And he was right. It was a bit of a freak show. I mean, it was nice. There were plenty of fans out there of the Majority Report and of TMBS and Antifada and of course Literary Hangover, which was nice to connect with some of those people. It was also super creepy to be you know, walking around and seeing Bill Kristol walk by, or Ann Coulter, or some guy wearing a three-cornered hat, wearing a full Patriots outfit, and not being for the Patriots, the football team. I mean, if you dress up like that as a mascot, that's okay. I mean, theoretically, right? You're getting paid for it, and it's tongue in cheek. But there was a lot of that in it, but it's very creepy to be walking around. I don't like walking around folks like Bill Kristol. I mean, if he, you know, obviously he needs to walk and he's allowed to walk, but
he's ambulatory.
Yeah. There's like a, there's an expectation and I don't, you know, I don't put the people who work on the conference on the spot, you know, they're just volunteers. But when they're like, oh, do you want to say hello? And I'm like, absolutely not. No,
wait,
actually.
People volunteer to work at this thing?
Well, I don't know if they're volunteers. I don't think they're volunteers, but they're just people who go to work. I don't think they do it for free. No, I think they get paid.
But they're people,
they're not, they don't work for the venue. I think they work different. I was talking to somebody who was like, I wasn't going to do this one, then I decided to do it. And so volunteer is the wrong word.
I was going to ask, who pays to go to this thing?
A lot of people. I don't know. and but it was strange. The whole thing was strange. We did two panels. One was on Mike Pence, and it was really not so much on Mike Pence as much as or directly on Mike Pence as much as it was on the question of, like, would it be worse to have Mike Pence as VP? And actually, our guest from on Monday's show, the pre-recorded, Anand Giridharadas, was on that panel. Elise Jordan, who had worked for Condi Rice and now actually makes a point of saying that she no longer identifies as a Republican. And the author of a biography on Mike Pence. And he was interesting. We may have him on. Mike Pence is a sort of a terrifying figure. According to his biographer, he is the most powerful. He is the, I want to say he is the theocrat who has attained more power in America than any other theocrat in the country. Or he's the most theocratic person to attain that type of power. I mean, he's full on theocrat. And I think I knew that, but I didn't hear it quite as explicitly. And that was actually an interesting conversation, I think. And we had another one, the Should We Be Socialist panel, that had no socialists on it. And I think
what'd you decide?
Well, the interesting thing is that there was nobody arguing for, you know, because there was no socialists on the panel. No one came out and said we should be socialists. I think this panel is going to be running on C-SPAN at one point, but the argument sort of broke down more into sort of like tactics. And I feel like it was an interesting crew of people, Bakari Sellers, Marcus Melitzis, Kyle Kalinske, David Pakman, and Anna Kasparian. And much of it sort of fell along the lines of tactics. And, you know, should Joe Manchin, I don't know what there was, should Joe Manchin, everybody agreed that Joe Manchin should be primaried. But then after that, there was some other sort of like, we need to get rid of Joe Manchin. And then it was unclear to me how that would happen outside of a primary. But there was a lot of that, which is not to say that people were defending Joe Manchin. But I think the argument was, in terms of, I don't know. I don't know what the argument was, really. I mean, and I was the moderator, so that was, I did my best. But it was interesting, nevertheless, and that there was a lot of people there. And Kyle Kalinske had a huge fan contingency there. And then on Sunday, I debated Charlie Kirk from Turning Points USA. And you guys played the clip of him freaking out with
Cenk.
With Cenk.
We also played him demand the banking one.
Okay, so later in the program, probably in the fun half, I think we're going to do the whole debate at an accelerated speed, like literally run the debate at like 1.3 times speed. Wow. But we'll do some running commentary, like a DVD extra. I will say this, though, just to give you a sense. So the only thing I saw that debate, I mean, I think we saw like 5 minutes of the debate with Hassan Piker, which is where actually Charlie lost it with Cenk, I guess, in the question answer period. But that was the only clip that I had really seen because it was on Twitter. And so we had a fan sent me a link, and it's not hard to find, a link to the Turning Points USA tax filings. And it's a 990 form, and you can see it for the whole years. And so I had some notes, and they were just basically, you know, things to remember to bring up. And I probably should have organized them different because there were some things I forgot. But on the outside of these notes, I wrote TPUSA 990 form.
You're such a
and
pest.
990A. And I don't know if during the debate you can see I'm like flashing it like this. And before the debate, when I you know, when we met Charlie, I asked him about it. I said, yeah, I heard you got into a big squabble yesterday with Cenk. And he said, yeah. And I said, was it about your pay or something like that? And he said, yeah, yeah, we were talking about pay. And then I go, because I looked up your tax filings. And it's pretty amazing. $4 million budget. You can only make $27,000 a year. And he's like, yep. And I was like, for 65 hours a week, huh? Boy, you should see somebody about a raise. And then he's like, well, actually, no, it's more now. And I said, oh, so you got a raise this year? And he goes, yeah, yeah. And he goes, in 2017, it was $49,000. And I'm like, well, that's not what it says in your 990. And he's like, yeah, I should talk to my accountant. I'm like, yeah, you should. And then I said, and I also noticed that your shipping, your postage, it's $250,000 a year. That's a lot of money on postage. He's like, yeah, we send out a lot of kits to colleges. I'm like, oh. And $1.1 million for travel? I do think, I mean, it probably would be a bit of a favor for Charlie on some level, because it sounds like his accountant may have messed up on that pay thing. Maybe I looked at it wrong, but I was pretty sure it was the 2017 990. And you can ask for more audited expenses. I think that's public because it is a tax-exempt organization, because they don't do any campaigning, supposedly. And so it was fun just telling him that he should probably get his accounting done. But that was all behind the scenes stuff. And, you know, I was just joking around with a guy, and he's very well behaved off stage.
Yeah. Leave it on the field.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Totally leave it on the field. And so we will go through the debate later.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. That should be fun. I'll give you a sense of what I was thinking. And I have to say, like, I don't know if people have seen it and they may skip our assessment of it, but I would say I give myself a B+. I feel like there's a couple of things I could have done better. And then there are things I could have done, you know, would have had to have hit like a grand slam. So, you know, minus the grand slam, and there was a couple of points I think I could have done a little better, but overall I think I did fairly well. And I think it's this is someone clipped this. This was a fun part. So there was a segment during the debate, and it was this the bank where I don't know what
this is in the banking.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, what I mean, there were a couple of places during the debate. We'll go through this in real time, but Charlie seemed to be a little bit confused about how banks make money. And the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, the reason why Republicans ostensibly want to get rid of it is because it's too independent. Because Congress does not fund it. So they can't inhibit its operations by cutting its funds, which is what the Republicans want to do, because its funds were set up in such a way to insulate it from those kind of attacks by lawmakers who may want to help out the big banks. The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, and I got this number wrong during by a factor of 10. Since 2011, really, I guess for 5 years after that, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau saved consumers almost $13 billion, billions with a B. And the funding to operate the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau comes from fees paid by banks, not unlike the FDIC, which is, you know, sort of, which is basically depositor insurance. Federal government backstops it, but there's some fees associated with it. But, and the way a bank makes money is they loan out money at an interest rate higher than the interest rate they give their depositors. There's that arbitrage And they make that money in between. Often a bank will loan out even more money than they have. But there are capital requirements that the U.S. government insists upon so that you don't loan out too much money that you don't have. Nevertheless, those fees are paid by the profits the banks make. The delta between what they pay out in interest and what they take in interest. Charlie didn't seem to have a really tight grip on that.
Money doesn't just sit there in the bank, Sam.
So somebody took a small clip of that audio.
This is Lizard Rumsfeld again.
Lizard Rumsfeld.
Lizard Rumsfeld's a key player on Twitter.
Yeah, this is pretty good. And as you know, or may not know, I play Hugo on the show Bob's Burgers. And here's a scene that Lizard Rumsfeld took the audio and put it into a scene with Hugo and Bob.
What is the budget? It is completely funded by fees that they get from the bank. Not one.
Oh, okay, so forcibly take money.
He went on to say forcibly take money from depositors, which is not actually how that works.
But, that is really good.
Love it.
Oh, folks, do you escape? We just got our box today, incidentally. Do you love the thrill of an escape room? I don't know if you've ever been to an escape room. I have not. I want to, though. This is high on my list. Where you are looking for clues and solving puzzles. Well, now you can bring the mystery home with Hunt a Killer. Hunt a Killer is a monthly subscription where you become a detective immersed in a murder mystery. Each month, a fictional serial killer will send you cryptic clues, objects, and letters that you can actually use to solve the crime in real time. This may be something I actually could do with Mila. This might be fun, actually, to do with your kid, if they're old enough. I don't feel like I would do it with a five-year-old. I feel like that might be a little scary. It's so interactive that it feels real. Perfect to play solo, on a date, for a game night with friends, or join their online community and work with other people who are at the same point in the story as you are. We just got the box. Literally, it showed up today. And I'm going to take this home. I'm pretty excited to do this, actually. I don't get a lot of opportunity to do fun things. Right now, just for our listeners, you can go to huntakiller.com/majority for 10% off your first box. They only accept 200 members per day, so hurry to take advantage of this offer. That's huntakiller.com/majority for 10% off your first box. huntakiller.com/majority. Check it out. Also, today's show gets support from Third Love. Third Love is a company that uses millions of real women's measurements. Third Love designs its bras with breast size and shape in mind for an impeccable fit and incredible feel. They got cups from A through H and bands up to 48. Third Love offers double the number of sizes that most other brands offer. Plus, their bras feature tagless labels, meaning no itching. That seems to me to be obvious. Do all bras not do that?
No, most bras have itchy labels.
Oh my God, that's ridiculous. They have straps that won't slip. They're lightweight, super thin memory foam cups, and an ultra soft smoothing fabrics. Check out the new cotton collection, which was created as a result of customer requests for especially soft, breathable bras and underwear you'll want to wear every day. And remember, if for some reason you don't love their product, returns and exchanges are free and easy. Now, folks, I don't wear bras. And I had a friend check some of these out. This is what she wrote. And she's extremely fashion conscious. Okay, she says, I like that they don't have a zillion options, so it's easy to choose something quickly. The fit is great. I usually have to return most bras I order online, even though they're in my size. I ordered two and both fit. That almost never happens. Super comfortable for an everyday bra, but not as boring as most t-shirt bras. What are t-shirt bras?
It's like a plain seamless bra you wear under a t-shirt doesn't show through.
And she also wrote, there are subtle, cute details, so I don't feel basic. So there you go. Fashionable, comfortable.
Do you need any
size is
that?
Correct. What's that?
Do you need any help with that?
Jesus, Michael.
The first read. Callback, Sam. That's all you.
Oh. Third Love knows there's a perfect bra for everyone. So right now they're offering my listeners 15% off your first order. Go to thirdlove.com/majority now to find your perfect fitting bra. Get 15% off your first purchase. Go check it out. This is a, yeah, I mean, it'd be great to find a place that you could regularly buy your bras that fit. At thirdlove.com/majority for 15% off today. All right. The Republicans, like I said at the top of the show, we're 13 days away from the midterms. In many places, you can vote early. And if you have any sense that you're going to be out of town, get your absentee ballots in. As you know, I vote up in the uh, 19th district in New York. This is where Antonio Delgado is running against Faso. My understanding, brief conversation with a Democratic election official up there, a lot of absentee ballots, which is a very good sign. And there's very high numbers for early voting. Republicans are coming out. I mean, keep in mind that on some of these special elections, we saw Republicans come out in higher numbers than they normally do, as well as Democrats. Democrats just came out with a little bit more higher numbers. So voting is going to be key. They have been activated in many respects by anti-immigrant policies. I mean, right now, you see there is a reason why Donald Trump is talking about this caravan, and we'll talk about it, of Central American, essentially families, crossing through Mexico at this time with the hopes of getting into this country, maybe even some hopes of getting asylum in Mexico as well. But here is Donald Trump at a rally. Where was this rally last night? Houston. This is in Houston. Very well attended, is my understanding. This is the one where I think Ted Cruz went and did the sort of simian thing where he held his hand out like this. And but
bowed down to Trump.
Here's Donald Trump. Listen. You can't go up in front of a national audience and say, hey, we're going to put it to the Jews. But you can do this.
Radical Democrats want to turn back the clock toward the rule of corrupt, power-hungry globalists. You know what a globalist is, right? You know what a globalist is. A globalist is a person that wants the globe to do well, frankly, not caring about our country so much. And you know what? We can't have that. You know, they have a word. It sort of became old-fashioned. It's called a nationalist. And I say, really, we're not supposed to use that word. You know what I am? I'm a nationalist, okay? I'm a nationalist. National. Nothing. Use that word. Use that word.
Now, I mean, Donald Trump, it's unclear to me that there are any policies that he's pursued that have been, you know, ones that you could call nationalist. I mean, Donald Trump is, for the most part, I would say.
He's got the tariffs, right?
What I was going to say, for the most part, a functioning as a typical Republican. With the two exceptions of one, his foreign policy is slightly differently aligned, probably more tracking his own investments, like literally his own personal investments in some fashion. And then the other one is the tariffs. Now, the tariffs, I don't know how you would call that a nationalist policy. It is hurting American businesses. And there are some American businesses it's helping. There are a couple of massive steel conglomerates who are coincidentally also big supporters of his that it is helping. But farmers are suffering under the retaliation on those tariffs. You have Chrysler going to be laying off significant percentage of its employees because of the tariffs.
Well, they're nationalists. Just because they don't work that well doesn't mean they're not nationalist in their orientation.
Well, like I say, aside from those policies, they're nationalist. But if there's other policies you can find that are nationalist, I'd be open to it. But he's...
he's essentially a neoliberal still.
Yes.
The right wing of neoliberalism.
Yeah. Like I say, typical Republican policies. And
he is a Republican. That's why he's the leader of the Republican Party. That's why he's enormously popular with Republicans. And that's why he's the same as congressional Republicans.
But the point is that he's just a liar. And he calls himself a nationalist, not because it's aligned with any type of policy prescriptions, as much as it is one in which it's easier to embrace that than to say, like, we're going to really stick it to the brown people. And
read between the lines.
Yes. You know who else was a nationalist? But
I'm a nationalist, okay? People don't like the word.
And regular people, Republicans, have been so trained to think like, well, not all nationalism is bad just because liberals are going to freak out in the negative against it, right?
Well, and also, like, we know how globalists have been used by the right, right? I mean, it means one thing for the left, and it means another thing for the right.
It doesn't just mean Jews, though.
Well, like I say, it means
globalization is a real thing.
What I said was, it means one thing for the right and another thing for the left. Do you disagree with that?
I think it means what it means, no?
Well,
There's like a dog whistle element to it, certainly.
Thank you.
There's an anti-Semitic element. I think some of it is what we would call structural anti-Semitism, which is not like literal hatred of Jews, but this more esoteric thing that Moshe Postone wrote about, where Jews came to represent the hidden parts of capital, which was why National Socialists, quote unquote.
So let me ask you this. When he uses it, what do you think he means?
I think he's talking about economic nationalism.
He means it in the esoteric sense, where Jews become a performative machinery of capitalism, Samantha. So
okay.
In other words, the Jew.
All right. Well, we will agree to disagree on this.
Can you
snap
love bras off with one finger?
I think when Donald Trump uses the term globalist, he is trying to trigger in the right wing lizard brain the way that it's used in right wing circles, which is to mean a cabal of people who are trying, in the same way that the John Birch Society has used it, the 100-year tradition, 75-year tradition that has been used on the right to imply that there is a cabal with Jews and Jew-friendly people who are trying to create a one-world government going to... It's part of the reason why the UN is a problem, part of the reason why all multicultural politics are a problem. I mean, I think that's what it signifies. Now, it's possible there are people who have a more nuanced take on that when they hear Donald Trump and they're cheering for him. That's possible because anything's possible. And maybe I'm talking too broad of a thing, but that is pretty much what I'm convinced that he's trying to do there. I don't think it's a coincidence that he's introducing this concept at a time where he's also saying that there are hordes of brown people who are coming to invade this country. I don't think that's a coincidence. Some people might think it's a coincidence.
I think he's talking about immigrants more than he's talking about Jews.
Thank you. Okay. And who do you think they have said paid for that immigrant throng? A big Jew who just had a bomb put in his mailbox. So I
typical
think he
left.
Knows. Right.
Smearing the right.
I'm not sure what.
Trump is discussing symbolic categories and you're smearing him.
Yeah. Samantha. I guess so. Is that the argument? Do you think I'm smearing? Do you think I'm maligning Donald Trump by saying this stuff?
No.
Okay.
Globe emoji. Globe emoji. Globe emoji.
Exactly.
I'm just saying it has two meanings.
Well, that's what I meant when I said it has one meaning on the right and one meaning on the left.
Well, wait. I'm going to get a little pedantic here. I'm sorry. It has critiques of globalization have two meanings. Nobody on the left says globalist. Globalist is a right-wing term.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Moving on to where Trump wants reporters to embed themselves in this migrant caravan to find all the despicable people amongst these families. Now, you can take that in two ways. Maybe. I don't think you could.
There's a lot of people representing symbolic capital in those caravans.
Exactly.
It's a big problem.
Exactly. Listen, this is a nuanced perspective I have about this caravan.
I'm not going to argue on this one.
Thank you. Here is Donald Trump asking reporters to please go down there and do the work, which incidentally they've done. There have been many, many reports of people interviewing these people who are coming in this caravan. And why are you coming? Oh, because Honduras is overrun by criminals and it's extremely dangerous for my family and I can't make any money and I'm afraid for our lives. In fact, the whole reason why people are traveling in a caravan is not because they think that somehow, you know, they're going to swing their four-year-olds at the Americans when they get there and overrun the country.
They're going to use them as human shields,
right,
Sam.
Right. It's because they are afraid of traveling alone. It's because they don't have the money to pay for smugglers and are afraid of those people, and they think that there is strength in a larger group. And so Donald Trump is asking people to go down there and embed themselves in it. And let's listen to him as he gets off the plane.
There are terrorists in part of this caravan.
You know what you should do, John? Go into the middle of the caravan, take your cameras, and search. Take your camera, go into the middle, and search. You're going to find MS-13, you're going to find Middle Eastern, you're going to find everything. And guess what? We're not allowing them in our country. We want safety.
You're also going to find a lot of symbolic capital, which
is disengaged
from the
labor class. But here you have, you're going to find Middle Eastern,
yes, he said that literally,
whatever that means. You're going to find Middle Eastern and MS-13 in the middle there. So, I mean, the idea is that somehow this caravan, they think these people from Honduras think it's in their best interest to hide Middle Eastern terrorists. And or you have thousands of people traveling together because they're afraid for their lives and they're, I guess, supposedly protecting MS-13 in there?
What happens is that first MS-13 protects the people that are fleeing MS-13, and then MS-13 is scared, so they bring in Hamas to protect them. And then Al-Qaeda comes.
When does North Korea get involved?
Here is...
But not anymore, because Trump negotiated it.
Here's a piece from the Times. Do you have this tweet, Matt? Will you send it to Matt? This is a clip from... The New York Times, a piece they had written yesterday. And it is about the perspective that this triggers in the right-wing brain. And do you have it? It is a clip that reads... But Mr. Trump's dystopian imagery, Mr. Trump's dystopian imagery has clearly left an impression with some. Carol Shields, 75, a Republican in northern Minnesota, said she was afraid that migrant gangs could take over people's summer lake homes in the state. What's to stop them? Said Ms. Shields, a retired accountant. We have a lot of people who live on lakes in the summer and winter someplace else. When they come back in the spring, their house could be occupied.
That's a great point.
I mean, so there are people who are susceptible to all sorts of imagery, and it's effective in some respects because there's a tremendous amount of ignorance out there, particularly amongst, you know, white people who are living outside of areas where they have some type of interaction with people who are not exactly like them. Here is Mike Pence. He is being asked by Robert Costa on the Washington Post live show, I guess, about this caravan. And here is the lie that Mike Pence tries to push.
Just to finish on the midterms, you're going to be heading out on the campaign trail soon.
I am.
Immigration's become a major issue. The president keeps talking about this migrant caravan, and he references Middle Easterners that are part of this caravan without evidence. Why is that, and where is the evidence, if any?
Well, it's inconceivable that there are not people of Middle Eastern descent in a crowd of more than 7,000 people advancing toward our border.
Inconceivable.
I mean, the truth is, well, let me the statistics.
Pause it for 1 second. Now, he wants to offer statistics. It is very conceivable that in a group of 7,000 people in Central America, and it's 4,000, I think, but let's just say 7,000 because he wants to double it, because apparently 4,000 is not scary enough for retired accountants living in a lake in Minnesota.
7,000 is enough to take over Texas.
7,000, you could take over Texas if you have enough 4-year-olds to swing around and use as human shields. The idea that it's inconceivable that there's no Middle Eastern people in this caravan is actually pretty easy to conceive of.
Right, right. It's...
And what would they do in this caravan? They're going to move freely through Mexico? They can move through freely through Mexico anyways. But let's hear, let's let him complete this lie, because Costas is like, what? Middle Eastern people? What is that supposed to mean?
I mean, the truth is, well, let me the statistics on this. I mean, in the last fiscal year, we apprehended more than 10 terrorists or suspected terrorists per day at our southern border, from countries that are referred to in the lexicon as other than Mexico. That means from the Middle East region. I mean, the idea that they would not be in this large throng, that what the president of Honduras told me was organized by leftist groups in Honduras, financed by Venezuela, and sent north to challenge our sovereignty and challenge our border.
All right. The idea, what does that mean by challenge our sovereignty? The idea that somehow we're going to open it. All right, we give up. But you should know that, and this is a pretty big story, and I don't blame people for not being worried about this. There were 10 a day, and you notice how the media doesn't report on this at all. And it's not like they didn't get a heads up, because back in February of this very year, Mike Pence said that the government was nabbing 7 terrorists or suspected terrorists a day on the southern border. It's obviously gone up. Now, what's very strange is that no one else has reported this. No one else from the U.S. government has reported this fact. It's just Mike Pence decided to drop this. Now, maybe that's why he was so pensive, no pun intended, when he was going to answer this question, because he was not sure if he should leak this obviously very top secret information that no one else has in our government.
Well, he doesn't want ISIS to know that he knows all
right.
this.
Right. Or that, or like MS-13, or like Mrs.
Scroll down, because he's gotten, this is on the PolitiFact, and it's pants on fire level of, and
can I?
The FBI's terrorist screening center, in a fact updated in January 2017, said that a known terrorist is an individual who's been arrested, charged, or convicted in the U.S. or abroad on a crime related to terrorist or terrorist-related activities, or a person identified as a terrorist pursuant to the National Security Council resolution. And scroll down. The FBI says that they haven't gotten anywhere near those numbers. There are no data for terrorists apprehended at the border, as far as anybody could tell.
And the thing from the president of Honduras, just, you know, because these things do kind of run in kind. The president of Honduras represents a far-right party and has been plagued by corruption allegations.
Right.
Yes. And has from comes from the coffee, hotel, and media sectors.
I wonder how Venezuela is getting this money. I mean, we've seen this, like Venezuela is getting this money.
Well, that's the funny thing, is that simultaneously Venezuela is totally broke, which they actually are, but then they have all this money. I mean, yeah, the money that Venezuela is still circulating comes from, like, smuggling drugs through the military, and I don't think they're using it to challenge U.S. sovereignty. They're using it to...
No, they're using it for communism.
Right, by which they mean buying houses abroad for when the thing collapses.
If you scroll down here even a little bit more, they there was apparently in 2016 211 people apprehended from Chad, Iran, Libya, Somalia, Syria, and Yemen. And that's obviously not seven terrorists a day. It's not even seven people a day. It's
well,
one
suspected
person a day.
Terrorist is a pretty wide concept for a guy like Mike Pence.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
Right. Like what Brendan just said. I mean, he could be including gay people, people who listen to music that is not that is quote unquote ethnic at a loud volume.
But this is working. I mean, it's clearly working.
Well, you know what I said yesterday. They're returning to their core brand proposition
of
2 weeks before the midterm.
Right.
Of course it's working.
Well, and that's, you know, in part because there doesn't seem to be like enough energy left in the tank as far as the national anthem. So lastly, here is a Fox right wing a-hole who seems to think that he is involved in some type of like wartime reporting here. I mean, he's got the whole thing. I'm surprised he's not wearing a flak jacket.
He does the hushed tones.
Yes. Here we go. This is that guy, Griff, who usually they send out to harass like, you know, actors or something like that to get them to say like, how come you didn't, how come you said, you know, America love it or leave it or something, you know, but here he is. Here he is. He's going. He's in the woods, folks, down at the border.
We've been hiding in the bushes, waiting to witness one of these crossings. Let's go. They're coming right now. You can see. You can see they've come in. They've got a family in a raft.
Excuse me, sir. Were you trying to cross into America illegally?
Yeah, there they are. There it is.
So what we're witnessing now
six
is
people,
a family, that
three
was
or four
being
kids.
Over by that
one has a scimitar.
That was paddling in the raft. This is a an attempt to illegally cross, and they've gone back over there. We seem to have fooled this attempt, but officials tell us that he's probably just going to look for another spot. You know, it's a legal crossing.
Yes.
Yes, but you came anyway.
Why?
Why did you come? Is what I'm asking you. Can you tell me why you came illegally?
The situation of Honduras.
You're in Honduras? You're from Honduras?
Yes.
What are the conditions there?
You could not have work in there because the criminals always will get your money.
Yeah. I wonder if Griff speaks Spanish. I mean, what about, like, the idea of, like, bringing, actually sending somebody down who could actually communicate to these people in some fashion? Very fortunate for Griff that this Honduran speaks two languages, and because I don't know.
More languages than he does.
Right, exactly.
It's crazy that he thinks that he comes off well in this.
Does for their people.
For their people, I think they do. They're not as as
people
nuanced.
Who are completely divorced from any type of basic human empathy.
Like, you have to be pretty far gone to watch that and listen to what she said and think that these people are like scary terrorists.
You have to be pretty far gone could be the description of the Fox News viewing base. But you know what? This is another thing that Tucker Carlson does that's intelligent. He'll say a lot and very manipulative. He says a lot. Conditions and many countries are horrible, and that's not a good thing, and you should feel bad about it, and maybe you should even do something about it, but it's not our political responsibility. That's how you offload a ping of conscience.
Right. And I mean, of course, it's not hard to make the argument that it is in fact our political responsibility.
Well, of course, that's the other conclusion. You could draw a map of, I mean, even MS-13 was literally created in Latin America, or in L.A., migrated back to Latin America, and had a lot to do with what Reagan was doing in Central America in the 80s, which was absolutely vicious.
Right, and we destabilized a lot of these countries, supported coups in these countries. Our drug policies have encouraged all sorts of cartels. It's easy to find a political responsibility.
You
if
could do
you
a heat
inclined.
Map, probably. Yeah. Of every single place that has an immigration crisis, you could link, whether it's World Bank IMF policies or the coups, things you're talking about, you could probably draw a linear relationship between U.S. foreign policy and certainly anywhere in the Caribbean or Latin America.
And one thing that did not come up in the context of the debate, which I lament, was the implications of immigration on things like wages in this country. And since it didn't come up in the debate, I guess I'll drop this now. But the vast majority of studies show, and to the extent that there are studies that are contrary to this, they've been debunked by some instances by right wing think tanks, that immigrant labor largely does not substitute one to one for American native labor. And there is as much data that argues that if you were to restrict immigration, particularly for immigrant labor when it comes to things like farm work, that you would end up getting far more automation, which would ultimately knock out native workers as well. Additionally, apparently restricting immigration can have adverse effects for high skilled labor, in that immigrant labor provides domestic services, which allow many instances mothers, some instances fathers, to return to the workforce earlier, because they are given they have childcare. None of this has to be undocumented. You could have all these people documented and they could still function in the same way. It may raise some prices a little bit, but the market for nannies, I think, is, you know, a function of demand in a certain area. And certainly with migrant workers, it would be nice to bring them into the system so that they could get protection in terms of wages. But there's no, there's simply no data to support that they have a significant impact on lowering wages. And then on top of that, we are aging out. The white population in this country, the native population, is getting old. And we need more workers to support our society, like things like Social Security.
I mean, this is even more extreme in the UK.
And it's actually a big problem in China as well.
Right.
I mean, it's one of our competitive advantages is that we have.
Well, that's how Japan actually undercut their boom.
There you go.
Negative population
Here's
growth.
The thing, though. Like, I don't like to argue on their terms about this stuff. Like, whether immigrants are good for the economy or whether in some sectors they have been used in the past to break unions and drive down wages. That's not how I decide what rights people have, you know? So, like, humans have the right to freedom of movement. And if the system cannot support that, then the system needs to change, period.
I mean, that's, I don't have a problem with that argument, but I'm addressing to the extent that there's an argument out there that wages, particularly in the context of a middle class debate, what hurts the middle class, that that immigrants present some type of threat. There is, I think, obviously another argument that we should have no borders, or that that people should have the rights to migrate wherever they want.
But those are kind of different things, right? Like, I'm just
that's
saying,
right,
just
exactly.
What I'm saying, it's like it's one thing when people say, you know, we should support immigrants because they do X, X, and X, which I agree with you because I think there's innate values at work. And it's another to just say, you're literally lying about what they're doing here.
Yeah, exactly. I'm addressing the arguments of the woman who owns the lake house, who thinks that migrant hordes are going to take over her house. I'm addressing the arguments that we hear from people who may not subscribe to the idea that we shouldn't have borders, that there is some type of material harm that is being done to American citizens or American workers by immigrants. And my argument is that's not the case. Now, yes, you can take undocumented or even documented immigrants and use them and leverage them against.
This has happened.
Yes, I know. You can do that. You can do that with scabs, too. I mean, who don't necessarily have to be undocumented. And yeah. I'm not even sure that it's, you know, sort of maybe easier to manipulate immigrant populations than not, if that's the argument that you're making.
Or other economically marginalized populations.
Right. I mean, that's so maybe it's not a good idea to say that they are. I mean, you tell me, do you think immigrants are more easily manipulated than others to break unions?
I mean, it's happened in the past. It's happened with immigrants. It's happened with other marginalized populations.
Well,
bosses who want to pay people less.
Do you think that they're more susceptible to it?
I mean, yeah, if you can threaten to call ICE on somebody, of course.
Right. And so, I mean, I think that's a problem. But that's why I think we should be brought in to legalize them in this instance. But that is, I don't think that the right is concerned about their negative effects against unions.
No, of course not. It's pretty disingenuous on their part. But
that
you also,
the
when they're making a material argument, like, I like it that you're arguing with them on that level, I guess. But yeah, you need to deal with the material facts at hand. And in the past, like, yeah, there have been benefits to our economy, and there have been bad things too. Bosses have abused marginalized populations and used them to drive down wages. But the answer to that is to always incorporate everyone into your worker struggle.
Yes. All right. Well, look, we got to take a break, head into the fun half, and then we're going to go in. We're going to do a rundown of the debate. We will do the debate at 1.275.
We'll go about 1.2, 1.3.
He's just like, Matt talks about speed the same way a really confident airline pilot is.
Yeah.
Like, we're about 30,000 feet. We're going to be hitting in a little bit of turbulence. So you just sit
back,
put
on your
seatbelt
back. Well, I think what we're
going
to try to do is we're probably bring that up to 45,000 feet. We'll see if we can fly over those, and then we'll drop back down. Depending on the tailwinds we get, we may get you there a little bit early today. So sit back.
You may actually find that you actually absorb the information a little bit better at just a heightened speed of another point two. So just sit back, listen to Charlie Kirk's talking points and Sam Cedar's debunk. I think we all have a pleasant flight and enjoy the fun half of the show.
I just wanted to let you know the Wi-Fi is out today. All right, folks, quick break, and then we'll head into the fun half. Don't forget, you can support this show by becoming a member. Go to jointhemajorityreport.com, jointhemajorityreport.com for just pennies a day. You could become a member and support this program. Also, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, and chocolate. You get the Majority Report blend if you want there. You can get other blends, too. They've got a bunch of different coffees. It is the official coffee of the Majority Report. Today is Tuesday. That means that the Michael Brooks Show is happening. Michael?
We are doing a deep dive on the Mondragon Collective in Spain, workers' cooperatives, and how Jeremy Corbyn has a concrete policy proposal on actually transitioning enterprises to workers-owned enterprises in the UK, which is interesting. And then Brian Mayer from Brazil Wire is going to talk about this new basically reporting that there was actually a giant illegal slush fund that bought people's WhatsApp information and spread fake news in the Brazilian election, and the Supreme Court's reviewing it, and there's a very tiny outsized chance that the election might be annulled.
Wow.
We'll talk about that, and of course, we're on the anniversary of the political imprisonment of Lula. So a whole bunch of other stuff, patreon.com/TMBS.
And Jamie on the Antifada?
Yeah, so this week we had on two guests, one of whom was the editor-in-chief of Commune magazine, which is a cool new leftist-leaning magazine, to talk about his media project. We had our friend Andy Battle, who writes for the magazine, talk about his piece on why the New York subways suck so bad, what it means for public transit all over the place, and the public transit and freedom of movement in general as a potential site of struggle between competing visions, one of transit as a human right and a public space for public good, and the other as a space for capital accumulation. So we had a really good talk about that. And then we went into some of our utopian visions for transit in the future in a post-capitalist society, and that's a bonus.
Matt.
Yeah, I did a very nonfiction version of the literary hangover this time. The Mystic Massacre and the Pequot War. It's a sort of first textbook genocide of New England. Check it out. Literary Hangover, or patreon.com/literary hangover. And check it out on YouTube. Actually, that episode isn't up on YouTube yet. So you're going to have to go to the podcast.
Just keep looking for it.
Yeah.
Also, a thank you to Margie Gomez, who... I don't know if it, well, a listener who sent us all sorts of apples. It's like a apple fest in here. Fall festival. Nice. Thanks again. All right, folks, quick break. Head into the fun half. See you there. 646-257-3920. Oh. We had, one more.
You have that still?
Yeah, wait a second.
Have it.
Shoot. Bear with me one second. Oh, yeah, folks, before we go. Hunt to Killer, don't forget, it's a monthly subscription that sends you cryptic clues, objects, and letters so you can solve a crime in real time. It's so interactive that it feels real. We just got the box. Super excited. This is what's going to bring Myla and I together. Honestly, if this is the one thing that I can get her to talk to me at age 13, this is going to be huge. Right now, just for our listeners, you can go to huntakiller.com/majority for 10% off your first box. They only accept 200 members per day, so hurry up to take advantage of this offer. That's huntakiller.com/majority for 10% off your first box. huntakiller.com/majority. Folks, if you start playing, let us know how it's going. I want to hear different people's reactions to this because I think it's pretty pretty fun stuff. That's huntakiller.com/majority. See you in the fun half.